This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, America. It is Eric Erickson here nationwide. The phone number of the program, should you wish to be on it, 877-973-7425. I want to note a milestone real quick before we get into the bigger news, but this one kind of makes me sad. It makes me feel old, if I'm honest about it. The last 747 has been delivered by Boeing, which is kind of a milestone. When I was a kid, all I ever wanted was to go to the top of a 747. It was the very first two-story plane. Of course, Airbus introduced the A380, but the 747 was something very unique when it was built. I don't want to bore you guys with planes. You know, whether it was Bortz or Limbaugh, one of the things that all the research of radio say is stop talking about planes. Nobody cares about planes. I care about, it's always the host who cares about the plane and the audience like, nyeh. Although I have a lot of Delta pilots who listen to this program and Southwest pilots now. I just want to say when the thing came out, it was such a revolutionary plane and had so much thrust. The very first one took off from JFK in New York. It was a Pan Am plane. And when they throttled the engines to go down the runway, the blast was so strong that it blew the turf and sod behind the runway off. There had been grass there, and it blew it all away. That's how strong the engines were. And it was the queen of the skies, they called it, as a gorgeous plane, extremely distinct. And when I was 11 years old, I've told the story before, plane crash, all that delay, getting home, flying by myself around the world. They put me on top of the 747. Now, I remember our very first trip when I was five and I was headed to Dubai. We were on a KLM plane, a Royal Dutch Airlines, and we were on a 747. They put us at the very front of the plane. They didn't put us on top. Kids weren't allowed on top. But they put us in the front, and it was just this flat wall in front of you. And they had a big movie screen at the time. You know, nowadays you have the TVs. This is how old I am. Nowadays you got the screen on your seat, kids, or you hold your iPad. Like, I don't watch the screen. I just watch my iPad. You know how many people have been touching those screens? Ugh, I don't want to touch that screen. I just carry my iPad with me and have my AirPod Pros noise canceling so I don't have to hear the screaming kid by me. But in earlier times, shall I say, they had a big TV projector in front or a movie projector. And you'd watch a movie and there would be scheduled movies. And depending on your flight where you're headed, you could have one movie or you could have two movies. What I hated about that is they made everybody close the blinds for the movie projector. I wanted to always have my blinds because I want to see, like, if you're traveling over the North Atlantic in the wintertime, there are icebergs, and it was cool to watch, or you're traveling over the Alps or wherever, and they want you to close your blinds. So I would always crack it open. I would sneak and look. But you had movies on the screen. It was a common movie. It was a big blockbuster American movie always. Sometimes there were two of them. Oftentimes they were first run movies, so they were in the theater, but they were showing them on the planes as well. It was kind of impressive. And now the 747 is gone away. The one time I got to sit on top, was not nearly as exciting as I was expecting it to be, largely because I was 11. The seats, they went back fine. They were big seats, but it was kind of cramped up there. I was actually less impressed up there than I thought I would be. There was like a bar and stuff on KLM, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But it really is kind of a milestone moment in global history that this plane, which revolutionized air travel, the last one has now taken off, and it's for cargo purposes. There will be a Boeing 747-800 that becomes Air Force One, but then they're kind of done. Now, the reason they're done is fuel efficiencies. They now make wide-bodied planes. The 747, by the way, was the first wide-body jet. By wide-bodied, I mean it had two aisles. Instead of just one aisle down the road, it had two aisles. And they now make wide-body planes that are single-level and only two engines instead of four. The 777 from Boeing was revolutionary in that this plane could fly further than the 747 on just two engines, was more fuel efficient. I actually love the 777, which has an amazing safety record as well. And it's a great plane. Actually, the 777 is probably my favorite plane. But the 747 was the coolest plane, and it had four engines, and it made transcontinental travel, particularly across the Pacific, better. So, for example, the way the world actually works, if you look on a globe, if you look on just a map, you see Los Angeles, and a straight line across the Pacific goes to Hong Kong. But actually, if you get it on a globe and you position what's the quickest point, it looks on a map like an arch, which is why when you look on maps and planes and they have the map of where they go, you've got these big arches. You're like, why are they flying in these arches if they just look? Well, because the curve of the earth, it's actually easier to go from Los Angeles up towards Seattle and down over Japan to get to Hong Kong. It's a shorter route. For the longest time to do those transcontinental flights, it was very expensive and you had to stop in Anchorage and fill up. You couldn't stop in the Soviet Union at the time. They wouldn't let you. So you stopped in Alaska and filled up to make the rest of the journey. And with the 747, it held so much fuel, you could go from Los Angeles to Hong Kong or Los Angeles to Tokyo, wherever, nonstop for the first time. Nowadays, with the 777, it's so fuel efficient, you can go from Newark, New Jersey, all the way to Singapore, nonstop. You're running on fumes by the time you get there, but you can do it. It's just the progress in aviation, and that's why the 747 is going away. We now have jets that can hold roughly as many people in a single-story plane with just two engines that goes further. So the reason it's dying is because of great progress in the technology to build newer airplanes that are more efficient, go further, and hold more people, which is amazing. I've never been a big fan of the A380. It's just too giant. But I loved the 747. Anyway, there's my ode to it. Oh, wait. I gotta. My buddy Matt texted me. Oh yeah, ETOPS. That's right. Twin engine planes. Yep. That's the other reason. That's a good one. So ETOPS is your time in the sky, how far you can fly on a two engine plane. You've got to have so long in the sky. On a single engine, you got to be able to fly a certain distance, and ETOPS regulates that. And so a 777 with just one engine, you got enough time to be able, if you're going across, for example, if you want to fly from Europe and go across North America and the Arctic Circle to get to Asian countries, there is a very narrow path where with wayfinders to be able to go. So if the plane, something mechanically happens, you're able to get to an airport. Well, now they've adjusted the rules so a two-engine plane can fly further and longer on one engine without running afoul of the FAA and the like. I do have to say that I do have my, as a souvenir, Delta was the last American airliner to fly 747s. They converted a couple of them into American Express cards, and I've got one of the Delta 747 American Express cards, so it's a little piece of a 747 in my wallet. It's a really cool card. But anyway, all right, I've given enough. Yeah, ETOPS, several people, Brian and Matt are all texting me, ETOPS, yes. I need to move on to actual real stuff that more of you care about than my love of the 747, and that would be We've got a debt ceiling crisis on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. Perhaps, potentially, maybe, we're not sure. The media is not going to handle this fairly. And you need to understand what's going to happen and what's not going to happen. So the American Constitution requires the full faith and credit of the United States, which means all of our debts must be paid constitutionally. It was one of the provisions that Alexander Hamilton and the founding fathers steered into the Constitution to assure the European powers who had funded our war with Great Britain that they would be paid back. We put into the Constitution the full faith and credit of the United States. We will not default. If we hit the debt ceiling, money must be taken from, for example, pensions and retirees to pay our bond debt. But there's a level of brinksmanship that comes in this because we have the bond, we have the debt ceiling. I don't know that we need the debt ceiling at this point because they always raise it. But for now, Republicans are insisting that there be offsetting cuts, and we have a problem. And I can't emphasize enough that this is a very serious problem, and it's an esoteric problem. It's an abstract problem. It's one that people don't really understand, and it's very simply this. Our debt now exceeds our gross domestic product. And after World War II and in the height of the Cold War, the amount of our debt was equal to about 56% of our gross domestic product. So if everything that all the money that our economy produced in a year could go to pay off our debt, if we were in a real crunch and we'd have money left over. At this point, we need about a year and a half of our economic output to pay off the debt. That also means that our debt service payments on the national debt are about to become so high that they're going to exceed everything else in the budget. And in fact, if we keep going on the way we're going to get to the point where we can't fund any part of the American government because of our debt service payments. Something has to give. The debt ceiling has to be raised. Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader, is meeting with Joe Biden for the first time today. The White House says this is just kind of a standard getting to know you meeting. Kevin McCarthy, however, says he wants to talk about the debt ceiling and cutting government spending. Joe Biden is positioning himself as saying, I'm not going to negotiate with these people. I will not negotiate. There will be no negotiations. But every time Republicans have had the Congress and Democrats have had the White House, the Democrats have been willing to make cuts. All Kevin McCarthy wants. When I said the media is not going to be fair, let me read you this headline. In debt limit fight, Republicans won't say what spending cuts they want. What Republicans are actually saying is let's freeze spending at fiscal year 2022 levels. So roll everything back to 2022. They're your cuts. That we should be able to fund 2023 based on the money in 2022. That's unacceptable to the Democrats. They want everything to go up. We don't have the money. And this is the bottom line here. If you raise taxes on America's wealthy, they're going to start redistributing their funds globally because so many of these people, because the left values it, view themselves as citizens of the world. And because they're citizens of the world, they're just going to go elsewhere. And we're not going to have their money. There's only so much of their money we can take. And when we head into a recession, you actually need the billionaires of America to keep their money to fund their businesses and keep their employees employed as the economy winds itself down and begins to shrink. You actually need them to have more of their money to pour into their businesses. You don't need to be taking it to the government to fund things the government doesn't necessarily need to fund. There's got to be a way forward here. And the Democrats are essentially saying, let's just keep spending. Now, you and I can criticize the Republicans and say it's a level of intellectual dishonesty. When President Trump was president and they were in Congress, they just raised the debt ceiling. I was critical of them then, too. We need to start having some cuts. At least when there's a Democrat in the White House, they finally do get interested in cuts. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your partisanship is. I don't care what your ideological makeup is. our debt is 125% larger than our gross domestic product. If we take every penny produced by our economy today to pay off our national debt, we can't pay off the national debt. We have been in a situation like this in American history. This is not a stable economic situation. As we head into a recession, our treasury money declines, the revenue goes down to the federal government. They're not going to eventually have money to make the debt service payments. When they don't have the money to make the debt service payments, what do they do about Social Security? What do they do about Medicare? They're going to have to cut those services. They're going to have to cut the federal budget. We need to be building up our defense department. We need to be building up our defenses. We have other projects we need to fund, and we can't when we have this massive debt burden in the United States. And the Democrats don't want to do a single thing to fix it. At least the Republicans right now, every once in a while, when the Democrats control the White House, have a vested interest in doing something. Now would be a really good time for both parties to figure out what they're going to cut. And all the Republicans are saying is just, we don't have to cut anything. Just don't grow anything. Hold it steady. That should make sense, but the Democrats and the media want to blame the Republicans instead of dealing with the actual problem. The weather outside might be frightful, but in your bed, you've got super soft Boll & Branch sheets to sleep under. They'll keep you comfortable. They're just the perfect weight. Summer, winter, fall, spring, the perfect weight, and they get softer every wash. And right now, with the weather so cold outside, you want to just be snuggled up inside. They're the perfect sheets under which you and your loved one can snuggle. And right now, you can get 15% off your first set of sheets when you use promo code ERIC at BollAndBranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L. LANDbranch.com. The promo code is Eric, E-R-I-C-K. Boll & Branch sheets are the perfect 100% organic cotton threads that get softer every wash. Not only do they get softer every wash, but the drape across your body is just perfect. I really enjoy mine. We've got them now on multiple beds in the house. We've just kept buying them because they're so soft. And every wash, they get softer. And right now, get 15% off your first set of sheets when you use promo code ERIC, E-R-I-C-K, at BollAndBranch.com. That's BollAndBranch, BollAndBranch.com. The promo code ERIC.
Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. All right. Those of you on the phones, if you'll be patient with me, all of you, I will get to you. I've only got about a minute. Well, yeah, I got about a minute here. So be patient with me. I will get you in the next half hour. We will spend time on your phone calls. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Real quick, here's your hilarious punchline of the day after that 87,000 person increase at the IRS. This from CNBC.
And a new study has found Black Americans are between 3 and 5 times more likely to be audited by the IRS than non-Black taxpayers. Researchers do not blame the disparity on intentional choices by IRS staff. Study found algorithms used by the IRS drove the higher audit rate. Its authors are urging the IRS to modify its selection process.
Yes, racial bias at the IRS. Congratulations on those 87,000 new agents. Congratulations to you for listening to me, and so you can take advantage of this amazing deal from Omaha Steaks. You go to omahasteaks.com and you put Eric in at checkout. You get $30 off. That's the promo code, Eric, E-R-I-C-K, minimum order required. Valentine's Day is coming up, y'all. It is the beginning of February, February 14th, Valentine's Day. You need to think about, how about a romantic dinner? And instead of going to a super crowded steakhouse, you can make great steak at home. Unbelievable quality, delicious flavor from Omaha Steaks. You can get seafood. You want lobster on the side. You want shrimp. Check out Omaha Steaks. See what they're offering. They got great seafood. They've got great desserts as well. Add that to the meal. Take care of your significant other for Valentine's Day with a home-cooked meal. Nothing says love like that. Go to omahasteaks.com. At checkout, after you filled up your cart with deliciousness, put Eric in, E-R-I-C-K. Get $30 off your order at omahasteaks.com. With Valentine's Day coming up, don't dawdle, don't wait. Go to omahasteaks.com today. Use Eric as your promo code at checkout. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number 877-973-7425. As promised, let's go to the phones. I'm going to begin with Jim. Welcome to the program. Well, Jim, let's see. Can I figure out? There we go. Jim, how are you?
I'm pretty well. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, as for Tom Brady, I agree he's had an off year. I don't think his production has been very far down. I think his big problem is his offensive line gave him no running game. And so he had to kind of do it all by himself, do what he could. And that's very unusual because he's usually had a lot of protection with his offensive lines through the years. I can remember the year he was going to play the Giants in the Super Bowl, one of the two times. And one former pro said, Tom Brady plays with a clean jersey, but he's going to have a new experience when he plays the Giants because they're going to get his jersey very dirty. And I remember during that Super Bowl, him getting up off the ground very angry and disgusted that he was getting knocked around, and he just wasn't used to it.
Well, that's
true. Fast forward to Tampa, he lost his all his Pro Bowl center and one or two other linemen. And all of a sudden, he has no running game and a very one-dimensional offense. And he was barely able to squeak into the playoffs in a terrible division. And I thought, boy, you've dumped your wife and kids for this.
And a lot of people had that thought, Jim. A lot of people. And, you know, there was the whole shakeup with the team and the coach, and apparently he and the new coach didn't particularly get along, and it's been kind of miserable for him. Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, I've kind of felt bad for him. You don't necessarily need to feel bad for someone who makes as much money as he makes, but, I mean, to stick around for another year to come back after leaving, and then he comes back, and then that's what happens. Ugh. Just didn't go well. All right, back to the phones we go. Arthur, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon. I had a thought. The only source of revenue that the U.S. government has is you and me, right? Taxes.
Right.
But what if they had another source of revenue, like selling all the oil that they they license it to companies, but what if they produced it and sold it? And I don't know if that'd make a dent in, you know, like in the trillions, but it'd certainly be in the 100 billions a year. So then the government has some actual income besides taxes.
So, you know, they do to a degree. There are resources and the like on federal lands that they make money from. So, it's, for example, you cut timber on federal land, you're paying the federal government. There are oil extraction fees in federal territories that they pay. Outside of private land, they don't. So they bring stuff in like that. But then, you know, there are also fees, for example, airport fees, they bring in things like that. So they do have other revenue sources other than our income taxes. But also, they don't charge a ton of money for the use of those resources because what's going to happen? Then that money is going to be passed along, that cost is going to be passed along to you and me. So if they up the fees for extraction of oil from federal lands to oil developers, those oil developers are then going to raise their costs, which are then going to be passed along to everybody else. So there is the offset there you got to keep in mind. Bob, you're going to be up next on the Eric Erickson Show. Welcome, Bob. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Eric. How are you today?
Good.
I was listening to your comments about the tax code and auditing and the 87,000, and that they should say that there's too many minorities being audited, so they want to revise the algorithms. Well, if the algorithms are based upon history of audits and what typically triggers an audit, regardless of race, now they want to change it and make it different. So that builds in racial bias in favor of minorities in the tax code, which is against the federal law.
And
so they ought to just.
This algorithm business. It does. So here's the thing as well, Bob. So what they're saying is it's the computer algorithm. So when you and I file our taxes,
we don't say our race. So
that's
they
right.
don't know that they're auditing a white person or a black person.
That's
but
right.
it turns out in an independent review of who gets audited, it tends to be a black person who is audited more than a white person. Now, here's my guess, and I don't know, and they were very vague in how they reported it. But it sounds to me like middle-income people who make an extraordinary amount of their income on 1099s. Those are the people getting audited. It is the, what do they call it? The something economy for people who do Uber and Lyft and what's that? Yeah, gig economy. Thank you, Jim. Yeah, the gig economy. It's the gig economy people who are getting audited. And the gig yep. economy people turn out to be overwhelmingly non-white. Those are the people getting audited. And so it doesn't have to do with them being black. It has to do with how their money's coming in. And so now what the complaint is the algorithm is picking that up and it's disproportionately racial when it's really not.
It's really not. That's it. It's really looking at history of where abuses may have been occurring or inconsistencies. And they're saying, we got to look at this and see. So, you know, maybe they ought to change their business.
Yeah, you know, yeah, there are ways around this. Bob, listen, I appreciate the phone call. The phone number here, 877-973-7425. Let me break this down a little more for people so you understand. I was going to do a small segment on this, but it's actually worth doing a larger segment here. A study shows disproportionately the IRS targets minorities for audits. When you file your taxes, you do not state your race. The IRS does not know if someone is black or white. What this study purports to do is go find who's been audited and determine whether they're black or white, and it shows over time black people get audited more than whites, Asians, or Hispanics. So they say the algorithm has latent racism in it. The algorithm itself has race in it. The algorithm written by white people has a bias against black people, in other words. That's not really what's going on. This is outrage for the sake of outrage, but just follow along with me here. Where does a lot of the abuse of the tax code come in? A lot of the abuse of the tax code comes in from people who make most of their money with 1099s. People whose employment it flows through W-2s, which are employees, tend to not have as many problems with audits. People who take lots of deductions and have 1099s tend to be the people who play faster and looser with the tax code. So the algorithms go after those people. I, for example, work very hard to have most of my income in as a W-2 because I don't want to deal with the audit from an IRS agent. I could probably save money by funding myself differently, but I would rather be a W-2 employee through my company and not have a massive amount of deductions and the like. I don't want to go through that. The predominant race of people within the gig economy right now are black workers. Now, what do I mean? These are the people who drive the Lyfts and Ubers, people who do Instacart, the personal shoppers, things like that. They are not considered employees of Uber or Lyft or Instacart. They get 1099s. That trips the censor, the massive amount of income from 1099s from varieties of businesses. So if you're doing Instacart and you're doing Uber and you're doing Lyft, most Uber drivers are also Lyft drivers. You get 1099s from both of them, plus you get Instacart, plus you get other aspects of the gig economy. If you're doing Grubhub, DoorDash, Uber Eats and the like, you add that into it, you're getting 1099s from a lot of different people. You're taking deductions for gas. You're taking deductions for your vehicle. You're taking all these things. That is what is tripping the algorithm.
that it is a lot of non-white Americans who are participating in the gig economy says something about the gig economy. It doesn't say something about the IRS algorithm. But people who are race-obsessed in this country see disproportionate impact on race, and they're looking at the IRS for blame here. They should be looking at what's going on in the gig economy that non-white people are more likely to be a part of the gig economy. Non-white people are more likely to take a part of that aspect of the economy for income. And what can we do to stabilize them in a way that if they might not want to be a part of it, but because they're supplementing their income in other ways, they have to. I actually had an Uber driver a couple weeks ago. I had to drop my car off. It was early on a Saturday morning. I wanted my wife to be able to sleep in because she had a very long week. So I dropped my car off at the car dealer for some repairs, and I summoned an UberX. And the driver was a very nice guy, had a Dodge Charger, pulled up, drove me back. Turned out he and his family lived in the apartment complex across from me. He was saving money for his house. So he had a job. He had a regular W-2 job working for a building contractor south of me, but he was doing Uber and Lyft and DoorDash on the weekends and in the evenings because his family was saving money to get out of the apartment and buy a house. And that guy, I bet, was a target. If the algorithm picked him up, he would have been a target because he did DoorDash, he did Uber, he did Lyft. There was one other thing. He might have been Instacart. He did four of them, and he did those on the weekends. He hustled all weekend long and in the evenings after work so that he and his wife could make a down payment on a house because they had tried a couple of times to buy houses, and in the process of buying the houses, other people came in with cash offers and were able to drop money down and buy the houses. And so they were stockpiling their cash to give them more flexibility. But to do that, he was doing these jobs. He wasn't doing them because he was black. He was doing them because he was trying to save up for a house and have the American dream. But he happened to be black. If he got tripped in the audit, that would come up as racial profiling in the algorithm. And it's not racial profiling. It's profiling people who earn livings in certain ways. And yet this country and these people have become so obsessed with finding race in anything. They're looking at the gig economy and saying, oh, disproportionately, the people who work in it are black. Therefore, the whole thing's racist. Not true when you just step back and look at it. But what's dangerous here is the thinking that people are weaving their biases into mathematical algorithms. And you can't really show that that's the case. It's very subjective. And that thinking is more and more pervasive into even the media, where they no longer think objectivity is a good thing. They think it's a white man's game to be objective, that we should be as biased as we want to be, and our truth should shine. And so these people, their truth is they believe there's racism, and they sought to find it. And guess what? They found what they were looking for. It's not really research, but the media will broadcast it as such. Now, let me tell you about the Eden Pure. They've changed the discount code on you. If you go to EdenPureDeals.com and you put in Eric, E-R-I-C-K, this week they got a BOGO option. Buy one, get one free. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm is an air purifier. I had a lady actually email me the other day and said one of hers broke. It was under warranty. They had great customer service, got her a new one. They really do have great customer service. Not only do they have great customer service, it's a great product for eliminating odors in your house. So, for example, I'm in my new office. They had to repaint part of my office. I am allergic to paint fumes. I actually am. It causes me to have nosebleeds. It always has. But I could take my Eden Pure Thunderstorm, plug it into the wall of my office, close the door, walk away. It got rid of the paint fumes. Did a very good job getting rid of the paint fumes. Litter box odors, pet odors, smoke odors. You got a cigar smell in your car. I might have done that on accident. It takes care of those. I keep one in my travel bag for when I'm traveling. If a rental car smells because someone's been smoking it or what have you. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm wipes out those odors. You can buy one, get one free right now. You go to EdenPureDeals.com. The discount code you use is Eric, E-R-I-C-K, my first name. EdenPureDeals.com is the website. The discount code is E-R-I-C-K, buy one, get one free. This hour of the program is brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. Wherever you are nationwide, if you want your business to grow, reach out to First Liberty, see if they can help you. FirstLibertyGA.com, FirstLibertyGA.com. Tell them I sent you. Spend 10 minutes with them. See if they might be able to help your business grow. Now, I got to spend a moment here on the FBI. There's a story out today. It turns out multiple analysts say, based on the information the FBI had in advance of what happened on January 6th, the FBI had enough knowledge they should have been able to beef up security and notify appropriate authorities to beef up security to stop that incursion into the United States Capitol on January 6th. And the FBI dropped the ball. The FBI concurrently now to all of this is raiding Joe Biden's beach house under the assumption they have knowledge, reason to believe there are more classified documents there. They have gone in to search his beach house, which apparently that's something they're good at is searching beach houses. But every time there's some sort of shooter in the nation now, it seems like we find out the FBI knew or had reason to believe that there was probably a problem with this person, and they were keeping an eye on him. When you know, the San Bernardino terrorist shooter? Yeah, they should have known. Was it the gay nightclub in Orlando? The terrorist out there should have. He was on the radar. Why don't these things get processed? I have a sneaky, and this isn't a partisan point, but I have this creeping sense that our bureaucracy within the federal government is getting too unwieldy. Not that it is getting, but it has been for some time, and things are now starting to break down. And I think it may be time for some real reform within our federal bureaucracy, not just at the FBI, but the FBI seems to be the example here. They knew or should have known, had the information too, had they taken action to stop the incursion into the Capitol. Multiple shooters now were on the FBI radar, but balls got dropped, mistakes were made. I'm kind of tired of having people say mistakes were made when people are getting killed in things that were preventable. Maybe it's time for some real governmental reform. Kevin McCarthy is setting up this subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee to look at reform of the intelligence agencies and the FBI. I hope Democrats take this seriously, because it's not just Republicans. These things happen to Democrats as well. They do. More than once, there has been a terrorist shooter who we are told was on the radar of the FBI, and the FBI did nothing, and had they just dug a little more, they would have stopped him. There are a lot of great FBI, a ton, particularly at the local level, at the bureaus around the country, a lot of great FBI agents, but the bureaucracy of the FBI itself seems increasingly partisan, increasingly filled with an inertial inability to get things done. And this is indicative of the rest of the American bureaucracy as well. We need to clean it up. We need to reform it. It's going to cause us further problems across the board if we don't. Now, when we come back, we got to move on, because I talked about at the beginning of the show, Nikki Haley is announcing her run for the presidency. Well, Donald Trump is talking about how he's going to stop Ron DeSantis. I have some details. I'll take your calls as well. 877-973-7425.